We're going to continue today our message on the characters of the sermons, but this morning we're going to start with something a little different in introducing our characters. If I could have my players come forward today. Yeah, you three, you two, you. Just sit here and I'll embarrass you in a moment. I mean, you could help me in a moment. I don't know how many of you have ever watched sort of these old-time black and white movies. A lot of them are silent. But years ago when they would do that, there were certain things you would have to do. And we'll go along with that. So we're going to tell the story of the villainy of Haman. So we have our cast of characters. We have King Xerxes. Come up here and sit up here, King Xerxes. King Xerxes was a great king, a great military man. He just liked his feasting a lot. We have Queen Vashti, who's off stage right now. We have Esther. When you see Esther, she's supposed to be the most beautiful queen in the world. So everybody go, ah. Okay, we'll work on that. We have Esther's uncle, Mordecai. I need your help. Sorry. Stand over right here. We'll fully embarrass you right here. Mordecai is one of our heroes. We'll work on that one. And we have Haman. Hey, you guys have got it. Can you do a really malicious laugh?
Ha, ha, ha.
Is that going to scare anybody?
Yes.
Okay. We'll take your word for it. Okay. As the story unfolds, and this is, of course, the true story, though I'm going to abbreviate it quite a bit. King Xerxes, who really likes his feast, has feasts for 180 days. Who in the world does that? I don't know, but he did. By the time that he was fully drunk, I mean fully feasted, he got this brilliant idea. Aha! He thought, I will bring Queen Vashti in front of everyone to show her beauty. She will come in just her crown. We're not going any further on that. Figure it out. This is PG, guys. Of course, Queen Vashti, being a person of valor, says,
no.
And the king is like, okay. He was refused. How could he? So he says, be gone. He banishes. And then all of a sudden, he realizes, he doesn't have a queen now. Pretty short-sighted, buddy. Okay. So he says, we will come up with a plan. We will have the great way of looking at all the beautiful young maids. And all of a sudden, Esther comes on the scene. Just stand right here. That's what King Xerxes said, too. You can stand over there a little further. Unless you really want center stage.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. He likes it. Mordecai.
Yay!
I don't think they believe you're the hero yet. Mordecai finds out. He hears people talking about killing the king. So Mordecai comes over. He tells Esther. Esther tells the king.
We're going to kill him.
Okay, you can go back over there. And the king is saved, thanks to Mordecai.
Yay!
Better, better. They're getting on to the point here. At this point, though, something happens. On the scene comes Haman.
Yay!
Sorry, buddy, it's, no. Haman comes on the scene. He's been promoted to right beneath the king's power. So as he walks around, Mordecai sees him and doesn't bow. And Haman's angry. You angry? Okay, we'll take that. He comes back to the king and comes up with this devious plan. Now it's a good laugh, bad laugh.
Ha, ha, ha.
We'll work on that. I was thinking more like, yeah. Okay, no worries. anyway, he tells King Xerxes, you've got bad people around here. You need to get rid of them. Let's say today where you can go pay somebody to wipe them all out, and then you get the money. And the king says, free money, let's do this. So he makes it a law. Mordecai finds out that he and all the Jews are going to be destroyed, and he's distraught. We'll work on it. Esther, of course, sees that her uncle, you look so much older than here, you know, is upset. So she goes to him and asks what's going on, and he tells her the truth. But then he says, because he's the hero, that Queen Vashti, now the Queen Esther. That sounds like a boo, doesn't it? Let's go with just with a cheer, okay? Queen Esther. That's better. We're doing better here. Have I fully embarrassed you yet?
Yep.
Okay, good. We're on the right path here. Queen Esther is told, maybe, perhaps, for just a time as this, you're here. So Queen Esther says, I will fast. Doesn't sound fun, right? Mm-hmm. For 3 days. Really doesn't sound fun now. Don't worry. It's just days, nights you can eat, okay? All right. And tell everyone of the Jews to fast, and then I will go to the king. So Queen Esther has hatched forth a plan. She figures she will go to the king. Of course, there is a danger here. The king, who is not feasting, don't worry, you'll get it later, is sitting on his royal crown with his scepter. It's the best I got. Come on, buddy. But if the queen comes in unannounced, she could die. Yes, we could say, so unless the king raises his scepter to her, which is what you're going to do, buddy, okay. The queen comes before the king raises his scepter and says, I will do anything for you, even giving you up to half the kingdom. You probably ought to give her all of it because you've done so well so far. But anyway, that's the end of the story. Queen says, I've got a plan. I would like you and Haman to come to a feast. You're into this, right? So she goes back. She prepares this feast. Oops, okay. You think I was going to actually give you something to drink? As the feast proceeds, King Xerxes says again, I will give you anything, up to half the kingdom. At this point, she has been praying and fasting, and all of a sudden she knows this is not the time. So she once again says to the king, I want you and Haman to come back tomorrow night for another feast, which of course the king says, yeah, he got that right, because he's really into feasting. Haman at this point feels pretty good. The queen, come on, boy. God, show him how powerful you are. Yes. Haman here feels like everything's going great. The queen's asked me to feast. The king is there. What could go wrong? And then all of a sudden, he sees Mordecai. That's not what he's thinking, folks. He's thinking.
Oh.
Close. We'll work on it. I've got a plan, though. We're getting there. Haman thinks, I will build a great gallows and I'll take care and I'll talk to the king tomorrow about putting Mordecai on those gallows. He goes back home. He's feeling good. But the king can't sleep. The king is tossing and turning and realizes, I need something to help me rest, so I will have somebody read to me. Yeah, it worked back then too. I'll bring the histories. And as he's hearing the histories, he hears Mordecai saved his life. And all of a sudden he realizes, I haven't had a V8. No, sorry, that's wrong commercial. I have never honored Mordecai. I need to do something about that. Who should I ask to help me? And then he has the answer. The next morning, Haman comes into his presence, and the king says, I've got someone I need to honor. And Haman thinks, hey, this is me. And so he says, I know what you need. You need to put one of the robes on this man. Put him on one of the king's donkeys or horses that he's ridden. Have somebody lead him through town and said, this is what the man does, or the king does to the man he honors. And the king tells Mordecai, good, now go do that to Mordecai. Okay, Mordecai. Yay! And that's what everybody did. Haman was not happy. In fact, by now, he's like, uh-oh, things may have been going bad. But he's got a feast to go to. And now at this point, our hero, Queen Esther, comes forth. And then once again, the king says, what can I do for you? Up to half the kingdom. She says, save me and my people. For I am a Jew, and you've put forth a decree to kill all of my people. The king is not happy and says, who would do such a thing? And now the queen points to Haman. And now the villainy of Haman is seen to all it is. The king is not happy. He's furious. That looks like you had something bad for breakfast. You're furious. We'll work on it. This time he says, I know what I'm going to do to Haman. Let's just say it ends badly. We're not going to hear it's PG, okay? Go out to your chair. We're just going to pretend like he's taken care of, okay? But at this time, there's still a decree out there. So what are they going to do? So the king, who has just been feasting really well, doesn't know what to do. So Mordecai comes on the scene and says, I've got a plan.
I have a plan.
Now, hold a finger up. Yeah. Okay. He tells them, let's have the Jews be able to defend themselves. And the Jews, if they defeat their enemies, they can take the spoils. And so the plan is let forth, and a new decree is going out that says those who are against the Jews can attack them, but now the Jews can defend themselves with all their might. And on the day when the day comes, the Jews defeat their enemies, but instead of taking their spoils and wiping out their entire families, the Jews only attack those who have come to hurt them and do not even touch the spoils. And in this way, Mordecai and Esther are greatly honored, and people rejoice in the Lord and come into faith of the Lord. I'm through embarrassing you now. How to tell the entire Bible, book of Esther in 5 minutes or less, or maybe 10 minutes. We come across this, and we put this in context of our scripture, which said, when Jesus says, when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so you will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show they are fasting. Truly I tell you, they have their reward in full. Jesus was dealing with the question of fasting. As we looked at the story of Esther, Esther and the people of Israel fasted, but when she went before the king, she applied makeup. She made sure that she anointed herself, so she didn't look like she was fasting. She looked like she had been just doing everyday business. And Jesus said there was a problem with fasting. The problem is oftentimes people do it for the wrong reasons and in the wrong ways. Jesus warned about those who made sure that they looked like they were fasting. We talked about the people who are praying, who would go out and make a big deal in front of everybody, who would give and make a big deal to make sure everybody knew that. When it came to fasting, people were making a big deal to make sure people noticed that they were fasting. Oh, I'm suffering for God. I'm suffering. But Jesus says, well, that's not what we do it. That's not the way we do it. You have your reward if you do that. But if we're fasting, we're supposed to make ourselves look well. Don't make it look like we're fasting. Also, fasting sometimes is misunderstood, because the problem with fasting is sometimes we think if we're punishing ourselves, God has to rescue us. I'm putting myself through this misery, so God, you have to help me. That's not the way it works. God is not like the pagan gods of old or some of the pagan gods today, that if you suffer enough, then maybe it'll come help you. Fasting isn't about that. Fasting is about letting go of things yourself and submitting yourself to God. Fasting is about putting yourself in a place where you're giving up something in order to focus upon God. It's a reminder that you are not the source of your strength. The problem people have with fasting is they do it for the wrong reasons, thinking they're going to force God's hands. The problem with fasting is that people think that if I'm doing it, I'm the one making this happen, rather than looking to God. And the problem, of course, is sometimes people do it so that people can say, hey, look at me, I'm fasting, I'm suffering for God. I'm suffering for God. Oh. That's not what fasting is for. The purpose of fasting was for us to come to God and lay our needs before Him and say, God, we're trusting You. It goes back to the times when God asked Israel if they wanted to come to Him, and it was a voluntary sacrifice. They would give a whole burnt offering. They would take the offering to the temple or to the tabernacle. They would prepare it like they would prepare a meal. They would skin it. They would cut it in proper portions. But then they would burn the whole thing to God. See, most of the sacrifices that were given, either a portion was given to the priests to receive from, or some was given to the priest and to the worshiper. So the person giving the sacrifice also received a portion of it back to eat themselves. In other words, it was a time of feasting. But this one sacrifice, this burnt offering, was to be done, and it gave everything, all of it, to God. You prepared it like you were going to prepare your meal, and then you gave it all to God. And the reason for this is you were doing this to seek God. Most of the time these things happen during times of transition. We see this in Jesus after he was baptized, going into the wilderness. We see this with Moses and Elijah. These sacred moments. Also sometimes those moments of transition are when you're turning from sin and you're trying to say, God, I'm giving up this food to show you that I realize that it's not by my own strength that I receive forgiveness, that I need to look to you fully. And also fasting was done during times of calamity. And all of you know, calamity is definitely a time of transition. But fasting also was for a set period of time. Fasting also never endangers the person doing the fasting. In fact, oftentimes when somebody fasted a long time, we see God coming along and providing food. That was happening with Elijah. Elijah had fasted for 40 days and God came along, and one of the first things he did, he gave him food. Jesus, when the people were in the wilderness for several days, says, "Let us feed them, lest they go away." And again, I want to point out, fasting is never meant to manipulate God, or I also say, people. Fasting is a sacrifice to God. But it's not done to manipulate God. It's a recognition that in yourself, in your own strength, what you prepare isn't enough to make the difference. You need something more. You need God. And you know, as much as the Bible discusses about fasting, here's something King Xerxes would appreciate. Feasting is actually discussed more. You thought on an episode where I'd be talking about fasting, I wouldn't be talking about eating. But just as important as fasting can be, feasting can be an important time to remember God. What is Thanksgiving supposed to be? Thanksgiving isn't just supposed to get together to eat a big meal and watch football. It's supposed to be a time of thanksgiving. Or if you haven't figured that out already, giving thanks. I think y'all ought to have figured out. I don't think I had to do that. Feasting, enjoying a meal, is also a time where we can worship God. Because God has provided for us. This is where we can go back to what Paul said. Whatever we do, whether we're giving something up or we're partaking, if we're doing it for the glory of God, that is what matters. When the apostles were, the disciples at that time, were with Jesus, people came to him and said, "You know, John the Baptist people's feast, or fast, the Pharisees fast, why aren't you guys fasting?" And Jesus, I'm going to put it a little differently, this is basically what he says. It ain't time to fast right now. We're having a party. This is a time to party. The bridegroom is here. The Messiah is here. Now is the time to feast. Now is the time to rejoice. There's coming a time when they will fast, but it's not now. So I want each of us to remember there is a time to fast. We need to do it for the right reasons, the right motives. But also, there is a time to feast. And whether we're doing one or the other, we need to be doing it for the glory of God. And that alone. Because we do it for any other reason, we have lost our reward. We have lost the whole reason for doing it. And now, Father, I ask you to bless those who are here today. Go with them, and Lord, show them your grace and your strength in the days ahead. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. God bless you, and thank the kids today who I embarrassed thoroughly.